I actually think the biggest advantage in the technology is its flexibility and the way a human can interface with it.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of Bark, and my guest today is Julian Kurz, lead expert from HMS Analytical Software. We can benefit from Julian's vast experience in implementing AI solutions because he will share a few interesting perspectives. For example, that speed in AI adoption is not always beneficial. And for example, that efficiency gains can only be the first steps towards realizing benefits in AI. We also cover the topic of data culture, and he thinks that the communication discipline needed in talking to LLMs should become also part of data literacy and data and AI culture. These and more interesting perspectives are in this episode. Enjoy it.
Hi, Julian.
Hi, Carsten. How are you?
I'm perfectly fine. Thank you. And thanks for joining me on the Data Culture podcast today. Julian, you're a super experienced AI consultant, and I'd love to hear, what are you doing at your customer sites these days? What are the exciting implementations of AI? Where do customers, what do customers do? Let's start with an open question.
I mean, it is a really interesting question, right? Because there's so much you can do. And I think that really speaks to the this technology, that it really, in theory, can affect so much. We do everything from optimizing high security profiles where people can't write their, in laboratories, right? High security laboratories, where they can't write because of all the gear, the protocols, and they just speak it and the AI makes protocols and everything, to competitor analysis. Personally, I'm doing a lot of pharma right now and a lot of clinical studies. So aiding scientists with better navigating clinical studies, basically.
Okay. And on a, let's say, first of all, on a high level, what are the use cases or the benefits in the pharmaceutical industry, maybe in general? And I assume you are also alluding mostly to new Gen AI cases?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, right. In nature of my position is that I pretty much only get in contact with the Gen AI side of our business. I actually think the biggest advantage in the technology is its flexibility and the way a human can interface with it. Because, right, like if you honestly think about it, I think there's the comparative to the investments, the actual economic impact so far is lagging behind on a grander scale, but the interest is huge. And a lot of it is not new, but I think the mix and matching approach, that is very new. And the way you interact with technology has never been like that before, right? Like, I mean, you remember a few years, chatbots were really annoying and you could not do anything with them. Now they're just annoying, right? That's
And so do you see that in a, on a broad scale, that a lot of user interactions with, let's say, software technology is changing?
Definitely. And I think definitely that's the core of the work I'm doing right now. And I think a lot of people are doing in a way that, of course, you know, sadly, there's certain positions or menial tasks or manual tasks you would do before that they completely disappear from that side and only the downstream effect gets there. For example, if you look at something like competitor analysis, it is much less that in the project we're doing at the end that there's still even a person there, right? It really then ends up with the business analysis and they get it directly to their front end. And the AI is just, you know, like scraping the web, getting all these insights. And there's all these algorithms. And of course, you know, all the non-AI stuff is also automated and kind of flows together. At the other end, that, you know, most front ends I'm building these days are look very different. They have a chat interface, different people are using it. In one of my current projects, even I basically managed to put three different user levels into the same front end, which I've never done before, right? And I think that is really new and that is really interesting. And that is, I think that is a huge change in the actual impact, how it changes work life.
Okay, interesting. So maybe you can explain that a little bit further. What do you mean with three different user types?
Okay, So if you look at the pharmaceutical company, of course, you know, there's a huge level of control and oversight involved, right? And everything needs to be documented. And the regulations are really heavy. So that naturally led to fulfill them to lots of granular work steps. And if you, for example, look at clinical studies, of course, you need to like visualize them and do like data analysis. That is usually done within R. And there was like in this project a set of pre-written functions, which were heavily tested, which had a lot of quality insurance behind them. And, you know, the actual researchers used them to sort of evaluate their work. And they often can't code or not at that level, so they are kind of dependent on the people doing the coding. But there are some who can, and it was, you know, but that was really difficult to work with. So what we did is we kind of accessed these studies and built an agentic system that utilizes the previous code, right? It first tries to mix and match this code, but then it also uses as a starting progress to program new stuff or to even aid something that is outside of the scope of the original software, but in the scope of an AI agent. So what does that mean in practice? You can, for example, say you have a standard visualization of a certain effect of, you know, patients in a clinical trial, how they affect to the medication. And in this visualization, there's no way to indicate when the people had food. And that might be relevant. That's like a real life example. I talked to one of the researchers. Originally, she then had to go to like, you know, a computer scientist to sort of change that for her. And now she can just type it in the chat and the AI adds this visualization. And there's, you know, she can directly interface with it. And that is one side of the flexibility. The other side is actually what I meant with the three levels of users. The way we arranged it is that in one way, you can just work by clicking buttons and menus, right? Like these really old level menus. You can just select the pre-coded functions. And when you have them, every little parameter is there and you can just like very much click around. And even there is still AI involved, but there's basically no creativity, no interface, 100% control. And that is within the same app, right? This is just like a sidebar of buttons and the visualizations itself has all these hints and tooltips. But you can also type in chat as you would with, you know, any chatbot. So that's like the second level. And the third level is for people who can actually code, that there is also an interactive terminal there where they can just adjust the code, right? Like the AI is completely transparent what sort of code it uses and executes. And if they want, they can directly interface with that. So that is a very different set skill sets can work with the same app, right?
Okay. And you're saying that previously that would have been like three apps?
I think so, right? And I mean, like the programming part, probably 18 or something like that, right? You know, the normal programming setups.
So, and in the end, that saves time. It not only makes it easier because it's only one interface, but it basically automates a few things and in the end saves human work time.
I think it does. And the way it shifts it, right? Because often you can see if you actually save time, you fill that time with other stuff. So, you know, there's also this perspective that I think sometimes it just raises quality because you can spend, right? You can do more things within the same time frame you spend on one task. But I think the really interesting thing here is that it actually changes how people work together, right? For example, now the clinical researcher for menial tasks, he doesn't need the software developer, right? But he still needs him to enable his grander vision. But at the same time, originally, it was very common that, you know, like the data scientists and the actual, like more like pharmaceutical scientists who can maybe code less well, that they work completely separate. And we already see that they now work together. And that is like, I mean, honestly, those projects are not that long, but you can already see that that's like a huge, completely new type of beast, right? That people who have very different backgrounds now work in the same environment, can share that and each work at their level and skill level and make contributions because you can also like mix and share. And so some person who maybe just clicks like the buttons and chats a little bit, pass it to someone who can program and he can pick off his work and it's a lot more interactive. And I think that's really interesting, right? And I think that is definitely something I can't think of anything, any software case where that would have been possible.
Yeah, okay. So you're saying the way of working changes. It's become more collaborative.
Definitely.
And that in the end should generate new benefits. Is that correct?
I mean, I hope so, right? I think it's also very good always as an AI guy to be a little bit humble with these sort of things, right? Because, you know, there's this common joke that we really know how to solve problems, or we don't know anything about any problem. So we really need to talk to people. And as I said, right, the actual business effect, I think, grand scale, from my awareness, has not been super impressive so far, but that can change really quickly. And I usually don't worry about that too much, because that has been true for my whole career, that, you know, these applications, there is a culture adoption level to it, right? You will not see it within 2 months in a business report of a big company. It will have to grow and mature. And but I think it should, right? It feels very intuitive in what I hear from the people. It feels like it actually does provide a lot of value, yes.
Okay. What we are seeing, or what I'm also seeing in these conversations, is that there seems to be a change, that a lot of leaders and companies don't have that patience anymore with AI. Yeah. So we see more and more people that AI people that get under pressure, that they have to show their value and to basically show ROI of the investments in AI and so on. And you're saying, well, but you need to have patience, yeah, until things have changed. What's your take on that? Do you observe that too? Would you say you have to be patient, or can you do something, yeah, to still support your claim that it will take time?
So, you know, sometimes you use the same words, but they point to a different meaning, right? For example, you know, you can use your finger to point to the sun or the moon, and it's a different thing, but it's the same finger. And here, I think I meant something slightly different, right? Because what I meant was always true in a sense. Like, I also, this exact pressure you mentioned, I feel a lot, right? But the goals I get are usually not based on the revenue of, like, you know, like a big global pharmaceutical company. They are based on people getting certain reports on time, certain deliverables, feedback from users. And there is certainly a lot of pressure. People feel this should go very fast and it should do a lot more. And of course, that is always a big problem. And I think AI magnifies that problem a lot, that expectations of what is easy and what is difficult are sometimes very hard to communicate, right? And it's also, again, changes from person to person. You have users who are super excited, and even if things objectively might not go so well, they're like so on board already with the technology that whatever you deliver is gold. And there are other people that are so skeptical that you basically need to rely on some of their colleagues, you know, kind of saying calm down. But I think on the bigger global scale, that's also, I think that's really interesting, because I recently read something really interesting that someone said, hey, maybe AI delivering use cases so fast, because we're certainly seeing that, right? It's very fast, also from a programming side, might not be a good thing, because most of your ideas might not be as good as you think. So, you know, like, there's this whole thing. Maybe it's not always good to deliver something as fast as possible, right? Because a lot of building a company, I mean, I think, like, I'm sure you know, is about actually setting sustainable foundations. And just, you know, moving fast is not necessarily a virtue if you're not moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see what you mean. Actually, it's an interesting thought. I never heard that before, but it's really interesting to think about it. Yeah, whether speed is always a good thing. Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, and I mean, and I have to be honest, I also see that, right? That, like, some of the use cases have really low user bases, or they are just having a lot of computing costs associated with them, and need to be maintained, right? The more you move into autonomous systems, you actually generate something, for example, like the actual token costs, right? You often accumulate a large chunk of that regardless of whether anyone uses the product or not. Or if you actually, and if we go into change management, I mean, that's not my expertise, but I hear that's really expensive. And if you change your company for a product that in the end maybe was not as good an idea as you thought.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you mentioned cost, yeah, as something people should really take a look at. Let's look a bit further on that topic. So what do you see as the biggest challenges now when company move into more agentic systems? You meant more autonomous. So we mentioned this idea of, yeah, maybe not every idea should be implemented so quickly, or many bad ideas in a high speed way. You mentioned also, I think that was a very good recommendation to really I understood it like you should monitor your cost, yeah? Especially in relation to actual usage, yeah? Which makes sense. But especially with new technologies, yeah, sometimes maybe we don't have these established processes and already installed ways of working, yeah, to really look at that. Anything else where you would say, hey, this is something you should really look at when you now move into more AI?
Mm-hmm. I think you're completely right. And I think the biggest hurdle, as it should be, right? And as it has always been, I also don't think that is new, is of course the human side, right? I mean, a business in a sense is just a large community of people, right? That fulfills a certain role. And shifting that, and I certainly believe technology should just be a tool. Even if it runs a part of the company itself, which I think might happen, I don't know. And I think anybody who claims to know is disingenuous. But even then, it's just like part of a wider system, right? There's still like, it still needs to serve something and people need to associate it with that. And it needs to develop in its place. And I think that is always the hardest part. And at the same time, of course, stuff like costs and everything you said is very true. And I think I didn't, with my previous statement, wanted to discourage at all doing these projects. I think a good way is to either look at how you can really integrate it in a novel way, right? Like what is new with this technology? And rather than just trying to be fast, you try, because the scale is so huge, right? Like the lever which you get is so huge, that it's probably good to spend more resources and do these projects really well. And even if the main use case is just developing fast, right, then I think the best approaches are embracing that again more as a novelty than as the main attraction, right? For example, that you can now cheaper deliver an already good app, right, like something you would have done in the past, to a section of your company that maybe before the costs were prohibitive, right? So it's not about being fast. It's more about like, right, that this results in a cheaper product. Or that you can even like, I mean, right, that is like, I think very thinkable that people just build individual software even for like a project or for individual users, right? These sort of adaption layers. I think then if you more embrace it from this novelty perspective, it's good. And the same if you look at something like costs, right? Even the big companies, I hear people like, right, like on like people who have like big important AI jobs at the big AI companies, they're in the news all the time for either deleting their Outlook inbox or spending $50,000 in tokens for their personal open claw bots. And I think this shows, right, like that the role of the software engineer maybe moves one level up, but he should still hire like good people and take care of software development because the lever is so huge, because there's a lot you can do to sort of streamline these systems, build guardrails and all this sort of stuff. And if you logically think about it, if you have a very, very efficient system, small investments should lead into huge gains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of interesting things in what you just said. At least two I want to dive deeper into. One is I really like this idea of novelty. And basically, it's the idea that AI not only enables us to be more efficient, speed things up or automate things, but also to innovate. Yeah? So to build new things that never could have been done before. What I would be interested in is your take. What percentage of the projects or initiatives you see in companies are more on the efficiency gain automation side of existing processes versus being truly innovative, using this technology to build something completely new? Well, what's your take? Just a rough guess.
I wonder if I have an honest perspective on that, because my honest feeling is that a lot of it is actually novelty-based and that's all the more successful projects. But that might just be because we're a software consulting company. Because what I hear from the outside, right, a lot of these faster projects, you wouldn't hire a software consultant for that, right? You would just do it yourself. And these projects were just trying to be cheaper. I do think that they are more likely to fail. Because also, if you think about it intuitively, if you don't utilize any of the novelty, if it would have been a real business use case, somebody would have utilized it by now, right? If you would have been able to build it without this new technology, it would probably exist in a way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but maybe you take an existing process. Yeah, a lot of people are doing manual things, and now you can automate it using the software. But the process remains the same. It's not just maybe an agent, or a piece of code, or an AI model that is performing certain tasks. Yeah, and in that way you get more efficient. Yeah. Yeah, the process didn't change, and I wouldn't call that an innovation in terms of the process, of the thing that the company actually does or how you do things. That's just being more efficient, using tools to using technology to be more efficient. And you're right, that's what we do for a long time. But now we have a new tool available, that enables us. But the other thing is, maybe we can do completely new things with it, and reimagining our processes. And my impression is that this is a bit, companies fall short to actually do that. Yeah? So I think the primary focus typically is, okay, this is how I do it today. Now I can use the tool and I need one person less or something. Yeah. Or each person needs like 1 hour less a day or something like that, which is good. Obviously we will. And that makes sense to use the technology that way. But I always wonder about this innovation part. And since you see so many companies and see so many projects, and you're right, maybe you're a bit biased because if someone hires you, they probably have already some good ideas. But just your rough take, is innovation falling short? Is it something companies are really thinking of? Just from your observation.
I think innovation is actually quite good. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it's, I know it's fashionable to always be a bit of a doomsayer, but I actually think there's a lot of positive to say about that. Of course, right, there are a million rag bots, but I think that is normal. And right, that is something even 3 years or something ago, four by now, I don't know, was non-existing technology. And I think that's like the simplest case but I think that also can really provide real value. But there's actually, it is in a staggering amount of different projects, right? From large-scale automated code migrations to, as I said, right, like people just talking into a microphone and getting artifacts in a sense in an environment where they couldn't, to enabling non-programmers to program, to, right, like autonomous systems doing research. I think there's a wide range of cool software. But to the point before that, well, I think what I mentioned was a bit more subtle, right? Like even these efficiency gains, of course, they are important, but I do think it's important how you think about it. You shouldn't just think about it as moving what you would have done on any way faster. I think that is not very wise, but the ability itself to have a project that might not have been cost efficient is now cost efficient. That is novel in a sense, right?
Interesting. Which now talking about innovation and processes leads me to the interesting question. What I'm hearing is, it's a bit thinking about should technology adapt to processes or processes to or structure us in organizations to technology? And I know you did some thinking on that. And I really would like to hear it in this sense. Yeah. So we have a company structure that often determines also the processes. Now we have a new technology. What do you see happening?
I think both needs to happen, right? Because, right, like this technology is different in a lot of senses. And I think companies do need to adapt to it, right? I think the foremost thing is that people, right, like I always say it a little bit like an AI driver's license. Nobody right back then would have said, I mean, this is a car, right? I have to like learn to gear and shift and everything. It's completely useless. But if there's some training, of course, the car was a success story. And I think it's the same way. I think a lot of stuff where AI actually fails is a misuse of expectations, right? Like what it means to work with a language system. Actually, an interesting thing I see is that a lot of people get confronted that they have, I think, a general maybe a not as good understanding as they think of what human language actually has as pros and cons, right? I mean, like to maybe illustrate this in a more clearer example that people often get, of course, upset at these outputs of an LLM, but in a way that is not really fixable because they ask for a good burger recipe And that is just poor communication on the person asking the question, right? Because is it for an influencer doing a high style blog? Is it for a big restaurant serving hundreds of people that need recipes and everything? Right? You can't just answer the question, what is a good burger recipe? You actually need more context, right? And you need to communicate more efficiently. So I do think that in general, probably for a lot of people, it's a good investment to sort of invest in their ability to communicate with these sort of systems and to also write something like fact-checking, critical thinking, right? Because hallucination and stuff like that is a problem. And you have the larger scale implications of, right, like governance, how fast can you get products approved, these sort of things. There are certainly company structures have to change as well. But other things, I do think the technology needs to adapt, right? Like when it's regarding human trials on like cancer medication, of course, you need a certain level of oversight and human involvement and transparency and testability. And I think there it is on the big AI companies to deliver the possibility of achieving that and on us engineers of thinking of actually clever, sustainable ways. And maybe sometimes letting our vision, our perfection, our ego go and, you know, swallow the pill and actually work with the, you know, what's appropriate for what you're actually building.
Yeah, yeah, makes a lot of sense. We covered already a lot of ground. Maybe let's come a little bit to the summary of all this. So we mentioned some challenges that companies should look into. We also looked at the positive effects. I found it really good, yeah, your optimistic view on things, that also innovation is happening a lot, yeah, because I often see more these efficiency gains and then companies trying to do these ROI calculations, yeah, and thinking about, okay, I have this efficiency gain, but AI often is more expensive than people thought upfront. So I really like that thought or that observation that there's a lot happening, and also what we need to do. Yeah, you mentioned education. So basically, think or maybe starting also change in organizations with education. You compared it with a driver's license. I like that picture in a way. And what else? What else would be your let's say in summary? Yeah, what else would be your recommendations? How companies can be successful with AI, meaning, yeah, basically get the most benefits out of AI.
Mm-hmm. So I suggest what else? I think in summary, like the new issue, I think the most important thing to think about in general is context. Context is what you feed to the AI. And that can, of course, for example, be your question in a chatbot, but it can be much more. It can be your company data, it can be, right, like references, it can be a web search and everything. And what we are really seeing as we're moving to more of these multi-agent systems, right, their ability to adapt to output is huge. That's why different people can work with it. And it's, right, like it can act as powerful APIs that combine a lot of company value in a way that was not seen before. But in the same way, you really need to think about at each step, because more is not better, right? How you efficiently select the context you give into the model for one task. And if that makes you make a lot of smaller tasks, this is basically what we're talking about with multi-agent system, right? Let's take smaller steps and really efficiently feed in what we want. I think that is especially on an like company view, really important, right? Like how do I get the right data in the right size and the right individual steps the AI should work on? And how do I validate that, right? That I think is the biggest thing driving AI right now, right? How do we actually provide the right information to the AI?
Interesting, super interesting. Please explain that a bit further. You said more is not better. And I think you referred to context information.
Yes, just giving all your information. I mean, first, it's really expensive, as we are seeing, right? Yeah, and okay. It's confusing, right? And then people often try to get like this step really haphazardly, right? Like what we are often seeing is, for example, like in very understandable example, it's like if a chat history gets too long, they say, let's just take the last 5 messages. But of course, that's again, right, like in misunderstanding of how communication works, right? Because the first question, the first entry in the history is probably really important, because that's the whole start of the conversation and the whole question. But what you see in more real time, if you look in these more multi-agentic system, right, you have these developments, for example, like skills, which is a description which is useful for one task, right? Like, how do I create one user story repeatedly? But also, how could that change, right? So that's a really small snippet instructions themselves. Then you have something like agents and sub-agents, right? Which is more like the head chef and all these specialist chefs working a kitchen, right? And they communicating with each other. And these smaller steps where you give like the right instructions, the right information for your task, right? You don't need information on meat to cook a pudding. Right. You need information on sweet stuff. Right. And so you only give that in. Right. And you have this head chef who just delegates like, okay, this is a menu. You cook the dessert, you cook the main course, and I just pass the right information to that. And then you maybe have someone, you know, like a taster who does quality control, and he's specialized on that. Right. It's another agent who has just information, ideally even to just taste desserts. And you have another agent that is specialized enough to just taste the main course. And if you look at it more like that, right, and there also comes specific user profiles, like something that customers love is that the AI actually adapts, right, and sort of gathers the preferences of individual users. So if 30 people within a department work with the same system, there could still be sort of like 30 different apps in a sense of 30 different behavioral styles. And that is also something that is not possible. And that is only possible if you really carefully see what information do I have and how do I appropriately cut it to size.
Interesting. So would you say this is like the main task of context engineering? I mean, that's the new term that we hear that now a lot as the new thing, yeah, to how to provide context. Maybe you could give us a bit of a definition or an overview.
I mean, I really like that, yes, as a word. And I think at the same time, right, you can see that often words, they sort of come and go and come back. Right now, I hear also agentic RAG and stuff like that, where they use these instructions again as a RAG system. And there is a use to it, right? So I have to say, I'm always not like outside of my sales department being interested that I use the most up-to-date terminology. And of course, the very real reality of actually appropriate communicating again, right? What you want. I don't think that the words point to the real reality. So yes, I do think context engineering is a good word, but it's not especially new. And the real danger is that it sort of fences you into a closer perspective than there might have been. For example, what I've just recently been involved is sort of like living context, right? Like, right, in a sense, you can judge if you have something like a skill, a description, how an agent should do something. That itself doesn't have to be a static thing, right? That can be a living thing that itself gets adapted with usage, with user feedback. And of course, you could still say that is context engineering, right? You sort of, in a very simple sense, just change the file you have saved to your system or based on feedback. But I feel that sometimes people sort of get into a box in thinking. So if you mean that by context engineering, yes, I think that is the important bit is feeding information to the system. And I think that has from the beginning, from day one, been the most important thing in actually working with AI, unless you're maybe a researcher.
Yeah, yeah. And we broaden the perspective that we not only need like the working data, the data that you need to build a model or to execute a task, but you also need the context information, meaning more metadata or more additional data that helps basically to do the core task.
Yes, and also how to, again, efficiently store that data, for example, that you don't, on a cost perspective, right? You shouldn't, if you want the same document summarized by an AI multiple times, maybe figure out a way to do it once and that an agent itself, you know, uses that repeatedly if they can.
And that's still a human task to basically design this system, how to be more efficient, for example.
Yes, and I do think, right, like this more of a guiding perspective is like, right, the version of the future where AI wins and gets like really quite good, but not so good to not need humans at all anymore. I think that will be certainly if not a very important job is sort of this more like architectural perspective, right? Like almost a mixture of like a software developer and a business developer, right? Like someone who keeps the bird's eye perspective on all these agents working with each other and making sure that they really efficiently get all their little steps and checks and data accesses in order.
Interesting. Julian, we're at the end of our time.
Thank you so much.
So maybe to conclude it, if there's one thing that a company or a data or AI leader should change tomorrow to be more successful with AI, what would that be?
I think really listen to the people who have done the jobs that AI should do now or help with before, but maybe not too much. Probably more for most people, but you know, also keep an open mind.
Julian, I really enjoyed our conversation today, and I will see you pretty soon at the Data Culture Summit that we will put on April 23rd at Boehringer Ingelheim. And we talked a bit about pharmaceutical companies today, and it's great that you will be there. Maybe you also give our listeners here a bit of an insight what your talk will be about.
Yeah, definitely. Super excited to be there. We're giving one of these power talks. And I think it's also very much about data culture, about integrating AI into company processes and creating new ways of working. So yeah, let's continue this conversation over a cup of coffee in person.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. And anyone listening can also be there and meet you in person. I think that's also a great opportunity.
Amazing.
See you there.